Now, the Buckeye Extra Podcast with Rob Aller, Bill Rabinowitz, and Joey Kaufman from the Columbus Dispatch.
The Buckeye Extra Football Podcast is presented by CF Bank, the boutique bank, member FDIC and equal housing lender, and Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Hello, everybody. This is Bill Rabinowitz from the Columbus Dispatch with our latest Buckeye Extra podcast. I am fortunate to be joined by Chris Hansen of the Eugene Register Guard newspaper, obviously covers the Oregon Ducks. And welcome, Chris. Appreciate you joining me here.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. I appreciate you having me on.
Oregon would have loved to have played this game last year at Austin Stadium. I'm sure that wasn't to be because of COVID, of course. Can you describe, first of all, how disappointed were people there that game didn't happen?
Well, obviously at the time, super disappointed. I mean, it was a game that was being pointed to for years. Although, I mean, considering how good the Buckeyes were last year and how the Ducks struggled, I'm not sure they would have liked it very much at the end of that game. But, you know, it was definitely a big missed opportunity for Oregon and Oregon football fans and Eugene to have a team like the Buckeyes come out to Austin Stadium.
And can you describe the level of anticipation for this game?
Really high. You know, people are not only, people are excited just to get college football back. People are excited to get college football back in a normal time and way. And, you know, and then this game on the schedule is just, it's, you know, what everybody's been talking about all summer. You know, if you had asked most people what the first game of the year was, I'm sure they all would have said Ohio State. You know, that's how much they were thinking about it. I'm not sure anybody really had Fresno State in mind last week when they were thinking about the Oregon football season.
And honestly, it kind of looked like that when I watched. You know, I watched a decent amount of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, is the feeling now? Is it excitement? Is it optimism? Is it maybe a little bit of dread? I mean, you know, I don't know.
There's definitely some trepidation.
Okay, that's a good word. Yeah.
But you know, last week was interesting. Oregon has a lot of new pieces and a lot of young talent, and some of them performed really well against Fresno. Some of them, you know, not so much, but, you know, I think there's an encourage. People were encouraged by the fact that Oregon was able to pull out the game when it needed to pull out the game. Their quarterback made some big plays when he needed to make big plays. But, you know, anybody who watched that game 2 days after watching, you know, Ohio State score 5 touchdowns of, you know, 40 or more yards or 38 or more yards, probably is a little nervous heading into this one for sure.
Okay. Last time Ohio State played Oregon, a rather big game.
Yeah.
We know what happened. You know, Oregon scored early on, or easily on that first drive, but they didn't even need a third down on that. And then Ohio State settled in. They got used to the tempo, and then they just manhandled Oregon. They just killed them in the trenches. How different is this team from that one 7 years ago? And how much of an emphasis has Mario Cristobal put in building a roster that can match up with the Ohio States of the world?
Yeah, I mean, he's really brought kind of that, is trying to create that SEC mentality out here where defense and offensive physicality, you know, moving away from those Chip Kelly years of just, you know, run and gun and put up 60 points to more running the football, building an offensive line that can, you know, stay with those bigger defensive lines of the Big Ten and the SEC, and then also building a defense that is really top-notch and is not going to get run over by, you know, when Ezekiel Elliott touches the ball, you know, automatic 10-yard gain.
How close is he to getting there?
Good job at that, to be honest with you.
How close are they?
I mean, the offensive lane is good. You know, they... 2 years ago, they were the youngest offensive line in all of college football. I think they had one start amongst the 5 starters, you know, combined. You know, that group is still together. So now, you know, they're very experienced and they're very talented and they're really big. You know, but at the same time, it wasn't like they were great running the football last week. You know, so there's still obviously things to work out. And who knows if that was just first game jitters or, you know, first game whatever. But there's definitely room for improvement on the offensive line. The defense, they have some really quality players. You know, they have NFL guys at all 3 levels. Now, but is Kayvon Thibodeaux going to play this weekend? That's a big question. You know, know, that's where it all starts and ends with that defense. They have two young linebackers in Noah Sewell and Justin Flo, who are just sensational. You know, play with their hair on fire type of guys. And then in the backfield, you know, Verone McKinley and Mikhail Wright, you know, they are really good. Some of the top players in the Pac-12 at their position. But then around them are just first-year starters, freshmen, you know, kids that need to prove themselves, and they're going to get tested this weekend.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, first of all, what should we know about Mario Cristobal? Kind of, how's he put a stamp on the program? You talked about it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the guy is just a top-notch recruiter.
Right.
Know, he's really elevated the quality of player that Oregon is getting in these last, you know, three, four recruiting classes. And, you know, and that's kind of his stamp, bringing in quality guys who are physical guys, high-energy guys, big guys, you know, and kind of using what he learned, you know, when he was at Alabama. That's what it seems like. It seems like that's what he relies on, you know, that experience on how to build a program.
Right. And he played at Miami, obviously.
And he played at Miami, yeah.
When Miami was Miami.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Not the Miami the guy that's been there. And kind of...
No, not the Miami that played Alabama.
Right. You know, let me back up kind of on a little bit of a similar tone. Not that Oregon has slipped the way Miami has, but after the championship game, things kind of slipped. Helfrich didn't keep his job very long. What happened?
You know, the talent level just dropped, and I think they're... You know, the switch from Chip Kelly to Mark Helfrich, and Mark Helfrich was just a really decent guy. You know, he's
right.
A good guy. But maybe that was too quick of a move. Maybe that was, you know, Oregon had a long history of promoting from within. You know, when Mark Helfrich took the job from Chip Kelly, you know, most of the assistants stayed, and a lot of those guys were assistants that had been with the pro team since the 80s. You know, so there was a kind of a culture there that just wasn't evolving. When you had a guy like Chip Kelly coming in, you know, the evolution was what he created, his style of play. You know, Mark Helfrich didn't have that. And he also kind of just thought that the train would keep on rolling, and it didn't. Once Marcus Mariota left, you know, the talent dropped, and, you know, and then Willie Taggart came in, and for all the grief that Willie took for being a one-and-done guy, you know, in the year he was here, I think he really instituted a culture change, and he really instituted how you recruit to Oregon change, and he also, by the way, brought in Mario Cristobal to be his offensive line coach, so... You know, he had an idea of what he wanted to do here, and obviously he left, and that also didn't translate well at Florida State. But he had an idea, and I think, you know, Mario picked up on that and has really just kind of run with it.
Okay. What's he like to deal with?
Easy. He's, you know, he's available for the most, from what I, you know, he's available a couple times a week. He answers the questions. He, you know, he's like, he's a college football coach, right? So he's... Everything he tells you is what he wants you to know, whether it's good or bad. You know,
right.
The purpose
right.
of what he says. But, you know, his players seem to like him. That he's good to deal with. You know, as a media guy, he's yelling at us all the time. So that's good.
Right. Let's take a quick break here for our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
Moving out of your parents' place and getting your own can definitely be intimidating. Starting to pay for your own phone plan can be a major drag. And becoming an adult can feel like life has moved the goalposts, right? With bills, loans, opening a checking account, putting money in savings, planning for retirement. CF Bank can help you cut through all that noise. You need to start building good, strong credit. We got you. You need a checking account that works for you, not against you. We got you. And when you need a loan to buy your first home, that's right, we got you there too. And you know what? You got this. Call CF Bank today at 614-505-5805 or visit us at www.cf.bank. CF Bank, the boutique bank. CF Bank, NMLS, 409132. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender. Terms, fees, and conditions may apply. All loans subject to credit approval.
You mentioned Kayvon Thibodeau. That's the matchup everyone's excited about. First of all, when healthy, what kind of player is he?
It's dynamic. You saw it in the first, you know, 10 minutes of that game on Saturday. You know, first series of the game, he gets in there and pressures the quarterback and flushes him out of the pocket right into the waiting arms of another defender. Second series, he just absolutely blows through a double team, basically untouched, and, you know, it's the strip sack that eventually led to an Oregon touchdown. You know, he's just a dynamic player. so fast, so strong. You know, he's going to be hard to stop if he's 100% or even close to 100% on Saturday.
And what is your hunch about that?
I think he plays. I do. Only because he got hurt in the first half or in the first quarter, went to the tent, came out, retaped, went back out on the field and played some snaps in the second half. You know,
second quarter. Second quarter. He didn't play in the second half.
Quarter. Yeah, thank you.
Yep.
You know, so if this was some sort of, you know, serious high ankle sprain or something like that, I'm not sure he would have come out and played in the second quarter. You know, maybe they just rested him in the second half. You know, because they didn't want to, you know, chance it. I'm not sure. But my hunch is he plays.
The other question, of course, is...
That's a hunch.
Right.
That's not...
Right. And the other question is, you know, yes, he can play, but a player like he is, he has to be dynamic. He has to be able to push off and use his speed and all that.
Right.
That's another question, how effective he can be. I mean, you know, Chase Young was here, obviously, and his, I guess it was junior or next to last year, sophomore year, I guess. You know, he played, but he had two ankle sprains, and he just wasn't the same player. He was good. He was still very good, but he was not the same kind of player that he turned out to be the next year when he was healthy. And so, you know, that's my thinking is, you know, yes, he'll probably play. He'll try to gut it out and give it a shot. The question is, how effective can he be?
Yeah, that is a great question because you're right. I mean, he's going to need that ankle feeling pretty strong and feeling good to be able to get that burst of speed, to be able to get that push off. How big was Chase Young?
Oh, boy. I'd have to look it up. I'm off the top of my head, I'd say 6'4", 260 or 70, but I'd have to look it up.
Yeah, he's significantly bigger than Kayvon. I think Kayvon's around 250.
Yeah, I'd have to look it up. Oregon also lost linebacker Drew Mathis, good player. But I know he was replaced by Justin Flo, who's a five-star guy, and seemed like he played better than Mathis did or would have. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that is fair to say. Everybody's been waiting for Justin Flo to play. He came, you know, he was here last year, but he got injured, so he sat the year out. You know, was one of the guys that everybody talked about in camp. Practices are closed at Oregon, so you never see anything. But you know, every time somebody would come out, you know, you'd be like, hey, who's playing well? And man, you heard Justin Flo's name more than others. You know, and he showed that on Saturday, that performance. I mean, just all over the field, so fast, so aggressive. You know, sometimes a little too aggressive. He got flagged for a late hit on a quarterback slide off a scramble. You know, so maybe a little too aggressive. But he definitely looks like the real deal. And you pair him alongside Noah Sewell, who was the Pac-12 Defensive Freshman of the Year from last year. And they got a pretty good linebacker duo.
Okay, and obviously Ohio State's is very inexperienced. They lost all their guys, so that'll be an interesting matchup. I mean, overall, how would you kind of describe Oregon's defense strengths and maybe vulnerabilities?
You know, their defensive line and the interior of their defensive line, they're two big guys who are both kind of starting for the first times in their career. You know, on a regular basis, I think both of them maybe have played a little bit before. You know, so they're untested. They're unproven. You know, I don't know how they're going to handle Ohio State's offensive line, how they're going to handle the run game against Ohio State. You know, so I'm interested to see that. It's definitely, I wouldn't go and say that that's the strength of their defense. They have a really good starting cornerback in Mekhi Wright. Their other cornerback position, you know, it was a battle between a redshirt freshman and a freshman all camp. And, you know, so those are two guys that, Dante Manning and Trequez Bridges, you know, those two guys are going to be tested against, you know, some top-notch receivers at Ohio State. You know, it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. They do get back DJ James this week, a cornerback who was kind of the projected starter until he got suspended heading into camp. And they get back Jamal Hill, their top nickel from last year, a really good player who was also suspended. You know, so they got some reinforcements coming in. But safety Verone McKinley is just a very, very good safety. And then, but opposite him is, you know, Steve Stevens, who is also kind of getting his first starts as well. It feels a lot like the Ohio State secondary, right? Where you got some veterans and you also got a whole bunch of guys that were high caliber recruits who are now, you know, kind of getting their chance in the sun. And, you know, you assume that they're going to be good because of, you know, just their resume. resume, but you know, they got to do it on the field.
Right, right. On offense, Anthony Brown is the quarterback, of course.
Yeah.
Transfer from Boston College. How did he win the job? Was he kind of, I mean, it was a competition, but what separated him?
I think his ability, you know, they said, Mario said when he announced that Anthony Brown had won the job on the Friday, a week before the first game, so I think it was like August 27th, at the end of the third week of camp. You know, up until that point, there was kind of a sense that the quarterback competition might be a little bit more up for grabs than anticipated, because everybody anticipated that Anthony would come in and get it because everybody behind him is just a freshman. But there seemed to be a sense that there was a competition going on there. But when he finally was announced as a starter, Mario pointed out kind of his veteran leadership, you know, being a six-year, mm-hmm. being a super senior with 28 career starts under his belt at Boston College, his ability to make explosive plays. And, you know, I think just that kind of combination was very settling for him. You know, he knew what he was going to get with Anthony Brown.
Right.
And
they weren't
as
very
a guy who wants to run the ball more than throw the ball. You know, maybe, I don't, he's never said game manager, but that just kind of is what it feels like.
Yeah.
You know, a guy that you can rely on, you know what you're going to get with him, and you know he's not going to screw up, and he might not be sensational, but you also know, you know, he's not going to be mistake prone either.
But they were not very explosive last week
offense.
Yeah.
They were not. And, you know, to be fair, they had three, they scored three times off of turnovers that were inside the 30.
Right.
Right. So they had short drives. They converted all those for points, you know, and then at the end of the second quarter, when they kind of needed to finally get a spark, they had a nice long drive that resulted in a touchdown that put them up 21-6. And they gave up a touchdown on defense right before the half to make it look worse at halftime. But, you know, that was a spark. And then, you know, obviously at the end of the game, the final drive had a 32-yard pass in it, and then Anthony Brown rushed that 30-yard on 4th-and-2 for the touchdown. So, I mean, they were hit or miss. They were hit or miss, you know? And that's, I think, is what's giving people some trepidation going into this game.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
where's the 50-pointers? Where's the big margin of victory?
It did look like he struggled in the passing game. Was it him? Was it the protection? Was it the receivers?
For sure, Mario Cristobal had some issues with the protection. You know, he said that there were a couple times where, like, the Mike linebacker got in there a little bit faster than they expected, you know, kind of flushed him out of the pocket. There was a couple throws for sure that Anthony Brown missed. There was another long throw that was on target, but there was a PI called. So, you know, they got some yardage out of it, but they didn't get the completion, even though it looked like it was a pretty good throw. So, you know, they called it a solid. Mario and offensive coordinator Joe Moorhead both called it a solid debut, and I think that that's probably what it was.
Okay. You know, Joe Moorhead was at Penn State, so Ohio State fans are somewhat familiar with him. What has he brought to Oregon? Or is it too early to say?
I think it's too early to say. Last year, he was dealing with a lot of, you know, with opt-outs and injuries. It was, and, you know, just the weirdness of the COVID season. It was hard to get a handle on what he could do. You know, now you've had one game this year. I think you'll have a better understanding of what the Joe Moorhead year is going to be about this weekend. You know, were they holding back last weekend? You know, I don't know. Were they, you know, keeping some things close to the vest? Were they keeping it simple? You know, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if they open it up a little bit more.
Right.
On Saturday.
Right. And Anthony Brown's a pretty good runner, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I can't think of the totals off the top of my head right now. But, you know, I mean, that 30-yard run, the winning touchdown run was, you know, it's one of those read options where he, you know, he kind of froze the defensive end and then to the left and then cut it back to his right and just kind of weaved his way through some defenders into the end zone. So, you know, he's a big guy. He's a strong guy, and he's, you know, got some wheels.
C.J. Verdell and Travis Dye split the carries of running back. You kind of describe them, and is that the way you expect it to be this weekend?
Yeah, that's how I expect it to be the entire season unless something happens to one of them. C.J. Verdell is, you know, about 5'9", and is just a strong guy, just a bowling ball. You know, he's the guy that's going to run between the tackles and just bowl you over. Travis Dye's a little bit more jittery, more of a, you know, speed guy. You can shake and bake a little bit. So it's a good 1-2 punch. You know, I think they have 4,500 yards in their career combined. They've been playing this dual role for about 3 years now. You know, but again, last week, they didn't do anything until the, you know, I think Verdell had, you know, led the way when I think Oregon rushed for about 86 yards in the fourth quarter, and Verdell led the way then. But, you know, getting that running game going, it took a while.
Right, right. And tell me about Oregon's receivers. I mean, they didn't do a whole lot either.
No, and they're a quality bunch, to be honest with you. And they also have Johnny Johnson, who's probably their top receiver right now. He had a 32-yard touchdown catch on Saturday. Micah Pittman is a you know, a guy who's been in and out of the starting lineup for his third year now. They have a young guy, Troy Franklin, who they Justin Flo was getting all the hype on defense during camp. Troy Franklin was getting all the hype on offense during camp. You know, a true freshman, enrolled early, and he was scheduled to start last week, but he got nicked up during the week, so he didn't play very much. He didn't start, and, you know, he got in for a couple plays, but, you know, they're expecting up more out of that guy.
Okay.
And then they have, you know, a couple others, you know, Devin Williams, a USC transfer who was averaged about 20 yards a catch last year for the Ducks. He didn't play much. No, but there's big expectations for him as well. You know, so there's talent. I don't know if it's Ohio State talent.
Let's take a quick break here for our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
You have to stand behind a statement like the best buying experience in the business. At Rosati Windows, their commitment to the customer has not changed since day one. Mike Rosati realizes that people have options when choosing replacement windows, which is why he appreciates each and every one of their customers. At Rosati Windows, they pride themselves on the very high standards of business ethics and customer satisfaction. They are accredited with an A+ rating with the Better Business Bureau, a top business with customer choice, and voted by Central Ohio as the best business in the window community with the Columbus Dispatch. That list goes on and on, but it's important to point out their customers voted for Rosati Windows for these awards, and it's why they make a statement like, Rosati Windows is the best buying experience in the business.
Well, you know, Ohio State is a 2-touchdown favorite.
Yep.
Does that feel right to you?
Yeah. Yeah, it feels to me. You know, I think Oregon's better than Minnesota, for sure. And that's coming from a guy who's from a family of Gophers. but looking at how that game played out, I see a very similar pattern. I feel like the game's going to be close. I feel like it's going to be close going into the fourth quarter. And, you know, where Oregon's kind of just chasing that one touchdown deficit or trying to tie it up late or getting within a field goal. You know, I don't think it's going to be a blowout. But then at the end, you know, Ohio State will probably pull away. And I think my prediction for you guys was 38-30. I'm going to stick to that, but it wouldn't surprise me if they covered.
Okay. Yeah, I forget what mine was. I think it was, I can't remember. It was 45-27 or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah.
What do you think Oregon has to do to win this game?
They have to be able to run the ball. You know, to keep Ohio State's offense off the field, to make it easier for Anthony Brown to you know, open it up and complete some longer passes. You know, just to establish who they want to be in that game, they have to be able to run the football. They need Kayvon Thibodeau back as close to 100% as possible. You know, he's their best pass rusher. He just sets everything up. You know, that young secondary, you know, will be greatly, you know, helped by a pass rush. You know, that for sure. If they can, you know, duplicate the turnovers that they forced against Fresno State, they forced 4 fumbles, recovered 3, turned those 3 into 17 points, that'll be huge. And they got to be able to manage the environment. You know, this is I went back and looked, and I think out of that 2019 Rose Bowl game, so the 2020 Rose Bowl game from the 2019 season, they played in front of 90,000 people when they beat Wisconsin. 3 starters are left from that team, and then only 16 players played in that game, and I would assume a large portion of that, you know, looking at those guys, probably on special teams. right? So you got a group of guys going into one of the, you know, toughest places to play in an early season game where they're just, you know, still, you know, figuring it all out. And, you know, they got to be able to handle that. Whether it's not getting freaked out by the moment or two, you know, in the case of Oregon's linebackers, you know, being able to rein it in just a little bit, not getting too excited as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, for half of Ohio State's roster, it'll be the first time they've played in the horseshoe with any fans in it.
That's so crazy. That's so crazy. You know, and I think this is a good example of why you have Anthony Brown as your quarterback. You know, here's a guy who's made 28 starts, who's played in some big games, you know, and I'm not saying he wouldn't have beaten those other, the backups anyways, but I mean, this is a perfect time. This is when you need him to be the, you know, be the quarterback that's the calming voice, that's just the guy that's in charge, in control, and chill during this moment. And, you know, it's going to be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, yeah, it will be. I mean, Ohio State fans have pointed to this game for a long time. They were disappointed that last year's game wasn't played. I mean, I know I was looking forward to going out to Eugene for the first time. So, you know, at least you got this one.
You know what's interesting is that game would have actually probably been canceled no matter what.
Because of the air quality, right?
Yeah, because of the forest, the wildfires that were just raging nearby. You know, it was awful here for about 2 weeks. You know, so I'm not even sure whether it was COVID or what, that game was destined not to happen.
Okay. You know, just like Ohio State kind of carries the banner for the Big Ten, so does Oregon for the Pac-12. That's, I mean, you'd think USC would be that program, but, it's really become Oregon. You get a sense of how important this game is for the conference.
Yeah, it's huge. You know, I mean, the Pac-12, you know, gets kicked around pretty good, and most of it's deserved because they struggle to win these games. And Oregon's as big a part of that as, you know, anybody. You know, I know they have their Rose Bowl win over Wisconsin 2 years ago, but they also lost to Auburn to start that season. You know, and you said, we've talked about that 2014 national championship game. That was a really good Oregon team with a Heisman Trophy winner at quarterback and NFL talent all over the place, and they just got smoked, right? So the Pac-12 has some embarrassments to, you know, amend for, and this would be a good way to do it. Right. A good start, anyways.
Right.
I feel like, though, I've been around this team for 20 years, and I feel like we've been having this conversation for a long time. I thought that 2009 Rose Bowl team was really talented, too, and, you know, kind of catching lightning in a bottle that year as well, and I thought that game was going to go differently.
Yeah, it was, you know, that was Terrell
Pryor. Here comes Ohio State, and they just...
Yeah, I think that was Terrell Pryor's, you know, best game. You know, that was kind of his, wasn't his coming out party because he was, you know, had already kind of become a star. But
right.
He was, that was his game. You know, and Oregon had that quote with Jeremiah, what was his name?
Jeremiah Masoli.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, they were so quick, and but Ohio State handled them.
Yeah.
But, you know, think about it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Oregon's 0-9 against Ohio State.
Right.
You know, and I mean, it's college football, so that doesn't really matter, right? There's nobody even associated with this program from 2014 anymore, 2009, let alone 1942 or whatever.
Right.
But the trend is there of you know, not being able to capture the moment, you know, to go to, you know, go to Ohio State, get a win, and kind of solidify yourself. And that's what's really important. And I don't think the team's thinking about that. You know, somebody asked a player the other day about, you know, what's it like to be 0-9 against Ohio State? And I'm not even, you know, I think if you had told that kid that Oregon was 20-0 against Ohio State, he would have not known any different, right? So
right.
I'm not sure they're thinking about the Pac-12 conference ramifications of an Oregon win, but fans certainly are. The conference certainly is.
Chris, is there anything else you would like to add, anything we didn't touch on that you would like to bring up?
No, I think we're good. This is fun.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on and enlightening our readers, our listeners with all things Oregon. Look forward to a good game. And
absolutely.
Again, can't thank you enough.
You got it, Bill. Have fun out there Saturday.
Thank you.
The Buckeye Extra Football Podcast is presented by CF Bank, the boutique bank, member FDIC and equal housing lender, and Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.